Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy wherever they get their podcasts.
Delivering all the news, the informed views, and just telling great motorsport stories since 2003. Powered by theracetalk.com. This is On The Grid.
Yes, hello everybody. Welcome to another episode of On The Grid. And no, I'm not Tony Shebeki, and I'm thankful for that. As good as our great mate is, he's taken a week off, early in the season to be taking a week off for Shebeks, but he carries a heavy load on this show, so he's ducked off to Thailand for a week. So I'm in the big chair this week on The Grid, joined as usual by my colleague Mark Walker from theracetalk.com. Hello, Mark.
Richard Crail lies straight off the top there. Shebeki's not coming back, is he? We've seen the group chat. We've lost him to Southeast Asia. He's gone. See you, mate.
I think he's moving. He might pop up on the Thailand Super Series coverage at some point later this year, maybe.
No, not invited. He'll just be incidental and accidental and streaking across the racetrack.
Exactly. He'll just rock up at the Bang Sing Street Circuit, which is in our bucket list events to do at some point. So we needed Mark to bring in the big guns to fill the copious void that Shebeks leaves in our little show. And speaking about being overseas, our guest host tonight, and we haven't negotiated on the hosting rights yet, so we'll talk about that after the show when he sends the bill. Delighted to say that joining us on the grid this week is none other than the voice of Australian and New Zealand motor racing, Greg Rust from Rusty's Garage, is with us. Hello, Rusty.
Hello, boys. When I worked with Barry Sheen many years ago, with such an introduction, he would often say, "Ear, what's second prize?"
No.
I am not worthy of filling the Shebeks shoes. I can picture him just now loving, as he does, all sport, causing chaos and putting his business card forward, as you rightly say, at the Bung Sien Circuit, trying to get a little bit of future work there at some point. The great man.
I think what it is that it's week one proper of AFL this week at the G, and there's about six games, I think. So he's just resting the ground announcing vocal cords before that, which is what you do every year before the Grand Prix, isn't it? You just take some time to prepare for the attention announcements that bellow out over Albert Park every year.
Soda water and Manuka honey. You have Manuka to look after the Manuka honey.
Not the black and gold stuff.
I can't sing. I'm terrible and I'm far from an ace voiceover person. But they reckon the pro singers use a bit of that stuff to keep the vocal cords clean. So maybe I need to do a bit of that. But yes, the great tradition of safety announcements and my good friends, which include you, taking the mickey out of me, continues, mate. And it's on a little personal note, Crailsy, I get to do something special this year. So my eldest daughter, who is 18, as you know, did work experience with us last year on the GPTV coverage. Some great old friends that I've worked with over time. And she's actually got a job with them this year. Wow. They've said to her, "Would you come?" So who knows if it'll happen again. Dad and daughter kind of get to work together. Pretty cool little moment.
Have you got her tickets to Glamour on the Grid?
Do you know those two? Because my youngest daughter is coming as well. That has been just like for weeks now between Dad, have you spoken to the Grand Prix Corporation? Dad, have you done this? And Dad, we're getting this dress. And I'm just like, okay, you know me, mate. I'm like a fish out of water at those deals. They love it. They enjoyed it immensely last year. And very, very kindly, the AGPC have said, yes, bring them along. We'd love to have them back again for 2024.
Hi, Greg. Mark here, long-time listener, first-time caller. big fan of your work at the old Rusty's Garage. Love a listen. And personally, for mine, I love listening to the guys that you don't necessarily know a lot about. And you talk to a few of these behind-the-scenes guys along the journey, and I find those chats fascinating. But for you, are there any standout chats you've had on the pod over the time?
Do you know, it's actually really funny that you say that, Mark, because someone said to me early on, "Oh, you're going to run out of content. You'll run out of content really easily." And I said, "No, I don't think so, because there are so many people in our game that have got stories. It's not just riders, drivers. I mean, you talked about engineers and, you know, whether it's team managers, behind the scenes people. There's so many of them. And quite often the ones you least expect are actually the very good storytellers. So you boys do this. You very, very well versed in podcasting too. It's about the conversation. At my stage in life, mate, I really enjoy that. Sam Michael was unbelievable. He and I sat down, and it was just before the Motorsport Australia Awards one year. And before I looked at my watch, like 2 hours had flown by, and he was talking about his wife being a little miffed at him because he was restoring a Mustang and he had parts on the kitchen table. I mean, there's all these yarns came out, and literally hours before I joined you guys today, I've tracked down the great Max Wilson in Brazil. So I did it at 7:30 my time, which was kind of mid-afternoon for him, and same deal. Nearly 2 hours flew by, so we'll make that a two-parter. And that same guy that was so ultra passionate in the early 2000s when he came in told some fantastic stories today, and he felt a little intimidated when he first turned up, A, because of how competitive the series was at that stage and certainly still is now. And I think he sort of felt like, well, I'm this international who's come in, the Kiwis and the Aussies are picking on me. They're like, why do we need this international driver? He felt the kind of need to muscle up on occasions, and he's not really a violent guy or anything like that. Far from it. He's very fit to this day, loves martial arts and things like that, but he felt the need to kind of stand on his own 2 feet. So he shared some good, fun stories from his time today. And a lot of people may not realize during that time that he spent with us in supercars that prior to that, I mean, he'd gone off and made it to test driver status with Williams. I mean, he got quite emotional sitting in Sir Frank Williams' office. To this day, he retains a great friendship with Patrick Head. I mean, just all these things that I learnt today. I'd always enjoyed his company before, in a commentary and broadcasting sense and whatever in that time where I got to work on it. But he was awesome today, mate. Yeah, so that'll be out in the coming days.
I remember as a kid interviewing Max when he joined for a little while Team Dynamic, which was the South Australian supercar team of the era. And I'll never forget, and I still roll it out every now and then where I can, is that in his very Brazilian accent, he was like, you know, I love these Super V8s. I'll forever remember the Super V8s. And people in the media center still call them the Super V8s. And I'm sure that comes from a Max Wilson thing. You're right about the learning about the characters that the mainstream or the more broad motorsport fans might not know. You recently had a chat with Dick Bennett, the team principal of West Surrey Racing, which was a brilliant, engaging chat. And that is a guy from this part of the world that has achieved at the very highest level. But in abroad, even among motor racing fans, you know, you'd struggle to survey 50 people in a racetrack these days. I reckon 25 might know who he is, and 10 would be able to tell you that he runs the most successful British Touring Car Championship team of all time, let alone the Senna connection and everything that went with it. So it's those kind of chats that are the most engaging.
And in some ways, I think he kind of prefers almost a bit of that. Yeah. I mean, he's not anonymous, but a bit of what you're talking about there. And I love that he's still a bit old school, Richard. He, you know, he'll happily write down on a notepad, a napkin, whatever, some feedback from the driver. He values the feedback. He said it cannot be all about data. But yeah, pretty amazing. Grew up in Dunedin, took off to England in the early 70s and has basically stayed there since and worked with some unbelievable names along the way.
It's something we've had a look at the racetalk.com lately is how motorsport media is changing. And you go back 20 years when, you know, RPM was a thing. It was how you spent your Sunday afternoon. Now, a lot of that sort of midweek analysis and magazine style show, it's been replaced by the podcast, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. And I mean, Mark, back in the day, I used to love going down into the bowels of the Channel 10 building in Pyrmont in Sydney, and they had tapes on tapes on tapes everywhere. And I got to the point where I could almost immediately know where something was. And there's all this great old gold in there from IndyCar to MotoGP, you name it. And yeah, the immediacy of what you guys are doing right now. I mean, back then, the Sunday RPM show, which over time fluctuated. I mean, at one point, I think it got up to a 2-hour program. And, you know, we filled it with all these great yarns that we built during the week. And Billy Woods was an unbelievable wordsmith in that live capacity. And it's been replaced now, because what you guys are doing and doing so well, it means that, you know, you'll turn this around really quickly. Fans have got it straight away. I miss, if I'm honest, I miss a bit of what we used to make back then. But you just, as the great Dick Johnson says, you just can't spend your life, you know, looking in the rearview mirror. You get a sore neck. That was a great chapter. Very proud of what we did at that time. And some of it required, there were some days where, I'm blowing smoke here, but there's some days where I worked 24 hours. I literally pulled a 24-hour shift because it required that kind of real hands-on, find the time code, write the script, help the editor bolt it together. And I wanted the end product to be really good. I wanted it to be a good story that had personality, insight, fun, and we could pepper it around the edges with all the news and everything else that was happening during the week. But yeah, the world of the interweb now means that you can get everything at your fingertips, doesn't it?
I miss the, what's the word, linear nature of how we used to consume the sport. And your Sunday afternoon was, 12:30, you might get a prepackaged half hour of a Carrera Cup or Formula Ford. Then you'd get some trackside, and then it'd spin off into RPM. And then it'd either be an RPM or it'd be a live supercars coverage, which would generally start at 1 or 2 and run till 5 o'clock. And then you'd stick around for Sports Tonight after that, because there'd be some analysis and a really good montage at the end generally as well. I feel like I'm reasonably good at content these days in terms of consuming it on demand and as it happens, and I've almost completely cut the cable at home from a linear TV point of view, but I do miss that ritual that I found motorsport to be, in that you'd know when something was on every Sunday, you'd flick on 10 or 7 as well, and that would be on. Is there a Rusty's Garage guest you're yet to have? What's the name up in lights that you haven't either been able to get or you dream of getting? Is it a Formula One driver? Is it someone obscure? Is it a legend? Where does the holy grail of Rusty's Garage guests sit?
Mario Andretti. Ooh, he sat with me once very briefly on the pit wall on the Gold Coast when the Champ Car race was there. I'll never forget it. And Crompo had encouraged me to ask some good questions and whatever. And he could not have been more accommodating. He's such a great human being. And every once in a while, I'll get a little message via Twitter. We follow each other on Twitter. I'm far from a close friend or anything like that. Lee Diffie knows him very well. And I've often held back because I just don't feel like I could intrude in that way, but I'd love to get him on the pod for sure.
On a segueing into this weekend, I suppose the other way that we consume our motorsport differently these days is the weekend coverage, whether it's the supercars or the speed series this weekend. It's all live. It's all, available anywhere you go. It's amazing the quality and the quantity of coverage that we get live from events these days. Instead of having to wait next week to get a highlights reel on trackside, it's already there on your phone wherever you are in the world.
And Mark, this sort of blends both Richard's question before and yours. So that linear nature of what we had before, there was something beautiful in that art form, which I still love even now. But the way you go about building the broadcast has changed. So you are about hitting those live markers that you're talking about. You might do some snappy, real quick little pieces that are personality pieces or informative pieces, whatever they might be, but they have multi-uses. We know we can spin those off into social media fairly quickly and use them again somewhere else, so that if a fan doesn't happen to catch the entire broadcast, we can hopefully lure them in with some of those things. And that means that the spend when you're making your broadcast gets you more than one hit, doesn't it? So yeah, you sort of think about how you're going to construct the weekend in a way that brings them ultimately to 7. That's what we want to do, be it 7 mate or 7 plus. And then ultimately other ways that we can, continue to, tell the story in the weeks in between.
What's grabbed you in motorsport from a positive angle first, I suppose, in the last week, 14 days, what's been your pick of the stories, the many stories that have been rolling out throughout the sport?
Nice to have MotoGP back. I think that's cool. IndyCar, McLaughlin, the way he was dive bombing in that race toward the end there, just super. an Aussie engineer on the car that won that IndyCar race, someone with supercars experience. I've had the chance to talk with Luke on a number of occasions. He's such a great operator. So some of those things I think are the real positive, and maybe that dovetails into what you were talking about before about celebrating some of the lesser known people that make such a mark on our games. So yeah, that's probably for me. I mean, everyone's saying, oh, you know, Formula One's got its dramas because Max is dominating, and the soap opera off the track is what's keeping the interest and stuff. I still think when you peel it back, there's lots of other great stories. Oscar finishing fourth. There's, you know, if you take a deep dive into the numbers that Dan Ricciardo has been churning out, lots of people have just looked at the end result and gone, oh, you know, well, actually, when you look at practice and qualifying form and other things, he's actually having a pretty reasonable run so far this year. So for me, there's more to it than just Verstappen winning by 8 seconds, 18 seconds, whatever it might be.
Can we talk a bit about Ollie Bearman? Because wasn't that just an incredible story? Goes and gets pole in Formula 2 and then has to withdraw from F2 because Ferrari pick up the phone and go, Ollie, Carlos has had to have his appendix out. You're in at 18 years of age. And I loved it. It was proper. That for me was proper F1 theatre. That whole process of the news breaking of Carlos being sick and it being announced that he was out of the car and that Ollie would jump in, to his poor old man having a camera trained on him for every session for the remainder of the weekend and every one of the laps in the Grand Prix, stressing out as his kid went about his first race, through to narrowly missing qualifying 3, through to what was a really impressive race performance. I think the biggest mistake he made was he grabbed a brake and locked a brake slightly in one corner. Like, it was just, it was a remarkable storyline. And the fact that that can still happen, I love. I think that's just what our sport is all about. When a young kid gets that kind of an opportunity and then revels in it and delivers way above what anyone thought he might do. I love that storyline from an otherwise reasonably tepid Grand Prix. That was just awesome.
And I'm a big believer in those moments, crazy, those, you know, whatever you call it, sliding doors, whatever. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately for Carlos, feels a bit off colour. It's appendicitis. That's got to come out. And like, for example, Callum Hedge, who won Carrera Cup last year, you know him well, he's suffered the very same thing in the United States when he first moved over this year. He's in Indy next. And he told me the comeback isn't as quick as you think from some of that stuff. I mean, some of the, I'm sure, you know, they've had absolutely top draw doctors helping Carlos, but it's not necessarily as fast as you think to get back to full fitness and the kind of core fitness that they need in a racing sense. But literally just before we recorded this episode, the kids were watching the Drive to Survive episode, which kind of focuses on Dan Ricciardo, Liam Lawson, AlphaTauri, etc. And the mirrors of what you've just talked about, I mean, Dan having that injury, Liam getting that opportunity, delivers points in Singapore in these grueling set of circumstances. There are lots of parallels in that for me. The new brigade are coming. And what was that stat that Sean Kelly rattled off? I think Ollie hadn't been alive for any of Michael Schumacher's championship successes. I mean, it's just
how old does that make you feel?
Exactly.
Because I remember them all vividly being incredibly depressed at the seventh one. But yeah, it's amazing story. Great stuff. And it added such a good layer of stored positivity over what's a pretty challenging scenario in F1. Are you looking forward to Albert Park?
Very much so. For all kinds of different reasons, F2 and F3 being there. I just wonder, from a Formula One sense, if some of the things we've seen in the Middle East might be a little bit different at Albert Park. Most people talked about the, what do we call them now, Arby's, the RB being a better tool, a better weapon in the preseason testing. Maybe we haven't fully seen what that's like there. So hopefully it's a good outing for Dan. I just think Piastri comes in great form. Unlike last year, McLaren are in terrific shape in the opening couple of rounds. So hopefully there is an Aussie either on the podium or knocking on the door of it.
This weekend, Speed Series at trucks on down to Tasmania. And I think for everyone in the circus, there are two highlights of the year. One is going to Darwin and the other is going to Tasmania.
Agreed. It's
something a bit special.
Yep. I mean, you boys know it's classic ball ring. As a part of the build up to this, Mark, Channel 7 said, hey, you know, for your opener and things like that, if you want a little bit of stuff out of the archive, knock yourself out. And what they sent me when we started scripting and getting ready was some really cool old stuff of Brock in sort of mid-80s and some of the commentary. I think they were reminding us about Sir Jack Brabham being involved in the original design of the track and so on. All three of us would be lying if we said we didn't enjoy a little lemonade at a famous pub down the road, which has seen its share of Grand Prix stars over the years. I mean, it's just a great place, natural amphitheatre. They typically turn out in good numbers in Tassie. Gary and Barry Rogers are very, very passionate about this thing. They put their heart and soul into seeing AWC Race Tasmania be a success story. And yeah, I can't wait to get there. From a broadcast standpoint, I think it's 9:30 to 4 each day on 7 Mate and 7 Plus. And yeah, we'll have some fun with it.
Real quick preview, Rusty. TCR was a pretty good start to the year, I thought, at Sandown. Competitive racing, defending champ Josh Buchan in the mix, as we always expected. Tony D'Alberto accumulating. Simmons is often a pretty wild track for TCR. It's had some good racing in the past. Any early predictions, any early thoughts, other than the fact that Buchan and D'Alberto likely go in as two of the favourites?
Well, Josh stays in the hatch. Now, remember the more modern spec Hyundai TCR car that they ran and that the World TCR competitors ran last year. They're waiting on some bits and pieces to come from overseas. So he's in the hatch. The hatch proved pretty handy at Simmons Plains. So that remains. What else can I tell you news-wise? Brad Harris back from injury. I think the bruising is on the mend, which is good. I think Tony versus Josh is a big thing. Let's hope that Tom Oliphant has a bit of a step up there too. You know, when you rattle off before speaking with Dick Bennett, I mean, Oliphant's one of the many people that have come through the West Surrey Racing side of things. So only 13 cars this weekend. So that might seem a little bit on the lighter side for TCR, but I'm hearing good talk that the following round of the championship will be back to 15, if not more. What I can't wait to see, Richard, is what happens with young Clay Richards. Hopefully that becomes a full season campaign. I thought he did a super job at Sandown. I really did.
Any race meeting, Rusty, as you well know, is enhanced when there's a Richards in the paddock.
Agreed.
Jim, yeah, I mean, Steve, Clay,
Priya. Stephen on the tools. Yeah, exactly.
The whole family. And Trans Am this weekend, 20 car fields, a really strong grid. That very competitive battle pack already added to with the likes of Adam Garwood, who was very good in Touring Car Masters at Bathurst a couple of weeks ago, coming into the field. Jordan Boys is in there, who's fast. Tom Heyman's quick, of course. Moffat, Slade, Golding, Hazelwood, Nash Morris. It is a superstar field, that Trans Am grid. I think the box office potential there is outstanding. We've kept you long enough. Thank you much for jumping on board. Hugely appreciated. Looking forward to seeing you this weekend for that little stop at the Longford Hotel on Friday evening, I think, on our way back from Simmons Plains. But
doesn't take much arm twisting, my friend, does it?
It doesn't.
At all.
It doesn't. But the biggest concern I have is I think we're all sharing a big 8-seater and someone's allowed Cameron Vanderdungen to be the designated driver.
Why? How come this has been kept from me?
Well, I read the production manual. So, I'm alarmed by that. A, it doesn't have a rotary, so I'm not sure how he's going to drive it.
I don't know if I'm happy about this. I think we might have to have words, Richard.
There'll be some negotiations.
Can we call a meeting at a little place called the Longford Pub? That might be quite good, mightn't it?
I think so. I think there needs to be some... Yeah, you need to put your captain of the commentary team hat on there and take over, I think.
Going to work as a team. We'll do it my way.
On that bombshell, Rusty, thank you very much, mate. Appreciate your time. Look forward to seeing you this weekend and then at the Australian Grand Prix and everything else beyond this year. And, of course, don't forget to listen to Rusty's Garage via Listener or anywhere where you get your favourite podcasts. Make sure it's in your favourite list. There's a huge archive to dive into. More On The Grid coming your way next. Now, let's face it. Everyone needs insurance. So, When you need to renew your cover, the On The Grid hot tip is to give our mates at City Rural Insurance Brokers a call. City Rural have been dealing with the insurance industry for years, and they've got more than 50 years of industry experience. Need insurance for your business? They'll sort it. Are you a landlord and want to cover your rental properties or investments? They're your people. Or are you like me and need professional cover in case you say something silly on a podcast? City Rural can sort that too. They did it for me and it was super easy. The best thing of all is that City Rural are, like you and I, motorsport people. If you've watched car racing this year, you might have even seen their logo on cars like the legendary Richard Mork Super Ute, among others. They know our game and they know the people that follow it. So support the people who back our industry. And when you need to throw a new setup at your insurance cover, drop Andrew and his team at City Rural Insurance Brokers a line and they'll fix you up. Head to cityrural.au or follow the links on theracetalk.com. City Rural, better cover, better service.
You're listening to the latest from around the motorsport world. On The Grid.
Greg Rust, what a super, super human being. One of life's great people is Rusty. And we record this show, as regular listeners will know, on a Thursday night. Which means living in New Zealand, it's very Tuesday night, almost Wednesday morning. So appreciate Rusty sticking around for that and jumping on to fill Chebec's boots for this week. What a good guy at life.
He is. I remember just after I first met him, he saw that I posted about a new barbecue I received and he was sending me recipes for his barbecue chicken straight yes. off the bat. So he's just genuinely top person.
That is a great love. A Greg Rust thing to do. Should we dive straight into the hots and knots?
Bugger it. Go for it.
Let's dive straight in. I'll kick things off. Hots. Team Penske. What a year it has been so far. And it's March the 12th as we record this, March the 13th as you listen, potentially. And Team Penske right now are leading all four championships they compete in. Ryan Blaney leads the way in NASCAR in his Ford. Joseph Newgarden leads the way in his Chevy IndyCar and Roger Penske's Porsches lead the way in both FIA World Endurance Championships. The first time Roger's ever led an FIA World Championship and the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Series. They finished 1-3-4 in St. Petersburg in the opening round of the NTT IndyCar Series. They are having some kind of season and it's only March. Ridiculous stuff. Hot for Ollie Bearman for all the reasons that we know. Hot to McLaren, and Rusty touched on it in his chat about the level of improvement that they've had. And you go back and yes, you remember last year they qualified awfully at Bahrain. They weren't particularly good and they were slightly better at Saudi Arabia. But it's only until you go back and look at the results from last season you realize how rubbish they were at the start of last year's World Championship. Lando finished 17th and 17th in the two Middle Eastern races last year. Oscar had a DNF and a 15th. Compare and contrast, if you will, to this year where Oscar's had an 8th and a 4th, a pretty racy 4th at that last time around. And Lando's had a 6th and an 8th, most of it jammed up the rear end of a Mercedes. And if I get the percentage calculator of improvement out, that is, it is 1,000,000,000% better for McLaren.
100%.
Yeah.
But just Oscar P5 coming into Albert Park. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming.
Correct. And driving superbly as well. And outdoing Lando in qualifying on the weekend was a particularly satisfying result if you're an Aussie Formula One fan. So that's a hot McLaren. And remember, they developed their car better than anyone last year. So if they can do the same this year, who knows what they're going to achieve. Last year, I talked about positive reinforcement when it comes to Ferrari and how they were actually closer to the mix in Bahrain. And they were. We worked that out with 0.047 seconds a lap better off this year. Well, on the evidence of two Grand Prix now, Mark, we can validate those findings. Because last year at Saudi Arabia, the best Ferrari, which was Carlos Sainz, was 35 seconds behind the end, behind the leading Red Bull, Sergio Perez, at the end of last year's race. This year, only 18 seconds. So that is almost half. It is actually half the margin. So that backs up the numbers we crunched. Now, remember last year at Melbourne, Ferrari were pretty handy. So if they can be that much closer again at Albert Park next week, then we might be in for a Grand Prix, which will be terrific. Hot that we start the 2025 Formula One season in Melbourne. Starting in the Middle East is rubbish. And Ramadan has come along at the right time and will start in Australia. It might make for great television for Europe, but they're not particularly good races to start the Formula One season, in my humble opinion. Hot Scott McLaughlin, for obvious reasons, went the full send and got a third place. Doesn't he look like a championship contender once again in IndyCar racing?
Doing his bit for the supercars cause continually every time he bombs it down the inside. I saw that at Surfers Paradise when he did that to Mark Winterbottom.
Exactly right.
In V8 supercars.
Yep. Full hot. Hot sports cars are back this week again. IMSA heads to Sebring for the 12-hour, one of the great American endurance races. So lots of cards on the table there. Will Porsche continue their dominance? Will the Cadillacs bounce back? Or will the Acuras or someone else get up? And that's the joy of sports car racing at the moment. We do not know. Big, big stuff. Watch Sebring on the IMSA website or Radio Le Mans, IMSA Radio, this weekend. Hot. Dallara. Turns out they built a pretty durable race car because at the weekend, the Dallara DW12, named after the late, great Dan Weldon, raced its 200th IndyCar race. Now, there is a but on this I'll come to later. 200 IndyCar races for that chassis. It has been around a long time. It saved a lot of lives. It's an absolute workhorse, and it's still, after all of the changes, and now they're introducing hybrid technology into it in the second half of the year, after everything that that car's been through, aero kits, different engines, all sorts of different stuff, they've added the cockpit to it as well. It still produces great racing. So well done, Dallara. That is a lot of races for a spec Formula car that should have probably only lasted 5 or 6 years. Rusty touched on Callum Hedge. Hot. He got the award for most overtakes in the opening round of Indy Next. Well done. That sums up Hedgie pretty well. If he doesn't qualify well, he'll work his way to the front. Also, Hot Indy Next, 21 cars, biggest since 2014, I think. Really good field for those guys. Hot Speed Series this weekend, of course, and Hot Adelaide Motorsport Festival is this weekend in the great state of South Australia on the short version of the Adelaide Parklands Circuit. Damon Hill will be there. Gunther Steiner will be there. A host of classic Formula One cars will be there among a whole array of very, very cool cars. Valtteri Bottas will be back doing skids in a Brabham, I think, this time. He gets a drive, so do some limiter bashing in that thing. It is one of the great events, Goodwood of the South. Make sure, if you're not going to Tasmania, get yourself out to Victoria Park in the city of Adelaide. The weather will be much cooler. And get along to the Adelaide Motorsport Festival. Check it out on socials if you don't know it.
Paul Hudley concur with that. Hey, Shane Van Gisbergen, P6. Hot. That's
good.
Hot.
Good at life.
He's not bad, is he? He was just outside the top 10 until one of the final wrecks where everyone crashed. But he didn't crash, which was sensational. And he was right in the photo finish there at Phoenix on the weekend. So you look at his first four races, 12th, 3rd, 37th with the engine drama, and 6th. P14 in the standings. You look at Ambrose's first four races in this series in 2007, 16th, 25th, 8th, 10th. Interesting. Pretty similar, really.
And a road course race next.
So he's got a weekend off. The Cup Series goes off to Bristol on the non-dirt there, and Shane will be going to Coda the weekend after for double duty in Cup and Xfinity, so that'll be big. It's also worth listening to Kevin Harvick's new podcast. He had a chat with Shane, happens to be his manager now too, which is quite handy, but really good chat. He was very open, and he genuinely sounds happy with life, which is what you want to hear from Shane.
We're all happy that he's happy with life, I think. That's what we want. Could he win both races at Coda?
No. If you listen to the chat with Kevin Harvick, he is nowhere on the simulator there because he's never raced at a place that doesn't have track limits.
Yeah.
Coda in NASCAR does not have track limits. And it's just insane. And sort of listening to his discussion there, you sort of get a feel that he's got a bit of the Ambroses about him, where he flows the car very nicely, but kind of struggles on the tight stuff, which is what Ambrose did. Ambrose was no good at Sonoma, but you get him at Watkins Glen, where it's a big, wide, flowing circuit like a Phillip Island style place, and he does very well. So I'd sort of keep the expectations in check for Coda, but wait for some of these other tracks a little bit down the line. I think he'll be doing just fine. And the cup race there from Phoenix, Christopher Bell had the win. New short track package was a bit better. It wasn't great. Phoenix is just a terrible racetrack for NASCAR or anything else for that matter, which is a shame.
Yeah.
Hot, Richard Crail, you did it again. Dale Coyne released his driving lineup 2 minutes after we recorded last week's podcast.
Yes, so he did. Yeah. No, that happened. No, very, very proud we could break/not break that news.
Yeah, congrats. Hot Gerhard Berger's Ferrari F12M Testarossa was stolen from the San Marino Grand Prix in 1995, and it was returned to him last week. How good's that? And you know what, Rich? This gives me hope that the laptop I had stolen from the AGP in 2012 will one day be returned to me. And, you know, wasn't flung to the bottom of Albert Park Lake.
It is 100% almost directly beneath the pontoon across Albert Park Lake. But it does give you hope. That is an incredible story, though, isn't it? And I think Jean Alesi had a car nicked as well from the same event, but hasn't got it back. But Gerhard was always the better of the two Ferrari drivers when they were together, so that makes sense.
I only got 17 more years to find my HP laptop, so... Yep. Looking forward to that.
Really good condition by then.
Hot Aston Martin on the radio to Lance. Okay, can you bring it back, Lance? To which he replied, no, I'm in the effing wall. good banter. Great banter. Isn't it good to see a sim racer do well in the real world with Max?
Mm-hmm.
A professional sim racer come good? Amazing. Hot George Russell managing not to laugh at the Saudi Arabian national anthem, narrowly averting an international disaster there, which was good. We saw you, George. No laughing at the Australian national anthem when they mentioned Gert either, I guess. and on George, Hot goes to the Poms with four of them the points for the first time since France in 1968.
Wow.
With the addition of Ollie to the roster there. Of course, completely moot point for the Poms since Piastri beat the lot of them. So, And on similar topics, Hot Bazball. Don't you just hope that the Poms keep playing that forever?
You do.
What a good thing.
You do.
Phillip Island Classic over the weekend was just great. All the galleries are up in the race talk this week. The showcase McLarens, which I believe a lot of them are going to turn up again at the Grand Prix, were incredible. They mix the Super Tours in with the Group A's and Group C's, and that's something that hope we see a lot more of in future. A few cars come over from New Zealand, which was great. The best racing is probably the historic Formula Vs, which were a lot like the modern Formula Vs, but more four wide somehow. there were lots of Formula Fords. They were great, except for the never-ending stoppages. Historic Tourers, two grids, tremendous hot, all great. Hey, Rich, what's brown and comes out of cows backwards?
Good question.
Phillip Island Ferry. They kicked off the weekend with the Cows car show there on Friday night, and that was awesome, except for all the race cars that overheated, stuck in the traffic jam trying to get there. So yeah. Try and organise that a bit better next time. The other thing I did in the weekend, I went to the Tyab Air Show. And fun fact, an air show is just like a really cool part of the race meetings, you know, where the planes fly over?
Yep.
Except it was just planes flying over.
Yeah.
It was awesome. Hot. You're not.
Very good. I'm going to knot you for the way you rolled that cows joke into the show. But
it was a Doug Mulroy special, that one.
No, it was very good. I can't go to the Adelaide Motorsport Festival at Victoria Park in the great state of South Australia this weekend, which is a shame because it looks epic. Much like Phillip Island Classic in some respects, but more city adjacent, with Damon Hill there. But anyway, we'll see him the week after. But that's a shame. Calendar clashes. That's a big knot. A serious knot. I'm going to knock the decision from Supercars to apparently drop their timed races, which they had planned to do at some of the sprint events this year, including Wanneroo in May. At Mount Panorama, for those eagle-eyed viewers, you would have noticed that they were using timed races only in all of the support categories, and it actually worked quite well.
Yeah. Yeah.
In terms of both knowing what you got, in encouraging people to not wobble around on the formation lap as well, which has been a massive problem, especially at Bathurst, that everyone's tried to solve. So rather than them complaining when they lose a lap because their outlap takes 8 minutes to get from the dummy grid to the grid by completing a 6.2K lap at 50 Ks an hour, now if it takes 8 minutes, that's 8 minutes of racing you don't get. Too bad. I really liked it. I thought it worked well. When the clock got to zero, you got one more lap, regardless of where you were on the racetrack. Tremendous. I'm disappointed that supercars aren't trying that. I think it's the thing they need to try. And it will just stop all of this argument over time certainty. There's a 60-minute window the race commences, and then it finishes, and you're done. It's funny because it's happened in endurance racing for as long as there has been endurance racing, and it seems to work really well there.
The 12 hours of time certain race, Richard. Yeah.
Correct. Well, yeah, exactly. So that's a not. I'm disappointed that's not happening. I'm going to not the Saudi Grand Prix, not because it wasn't a particularly great car race, really. There was enough going on to make it an okay Grand Prix through the field. The Haas backing up almost the entire back half of the field to help his teammate out was tremendous. Thoroughly enjoyed that. Enjoyed Oscar. Enjoyed Lando being Lando. And some of the quips were really good. But I don't rate that racetrack. Despite all the event of it being the fastest street circuit in the world, it's just a bit nothing burger, isn't it? Really? Mm-hmm. There's some awkward bits that just cause silly shunts. The rest of it's just all flat out DRS open. Baku is a better racetrack. It visually looks better as well. In fact, St. Petersburg is a better straight circuit, the IndyCar season opener, than the Saudi Grand Prix. That new circuit that all the drivers were definitely not being paid to promote on their social media, that looks cool. Let's go there. That looks all right with the blade. They caught it that corner, yeah. Like up on pylons. That's fantastic.
What happens when you have a massive shunt up there?
Well, mate, you're going to crash, aren't you?
It'll be the movie Driven all over again.
Yeah, it will be Mark Webber at Valencia times a million, but there you go. Anyway, there you go. And a blanket not starting in the Middle East. Don't like it. Start with a great event like Albert Park. It should be. A not to Felipe Massa's lawsuit, which has been launched. $80 million he wants now in damages over the 2008 World Championship result and indeed the Singapore Grand Prix crashgate scenario that year. I'd love to know if he and Timo Glock still swap credit cards, Christmas cards. Yeah, I don't know. I don't like it. Well, the upside to that.
What's the statute of limitations on that?
Well, that's a very good question. It was a long time ago, Felipe. You probably weren't going to win the world championship anyway. So he thinks he was. Anyway, disappointing. Just opening up old wounds. The extreme heat in the southern end of South Australia last weekend of Australia, full stop, unfortunately saw the Malala round of the South Australian Motor Racing Championships we promoted on the show last week cancelled. It's not that it got cancelled. It's a hot, literally and figuratively, in that it was a good life decision because at 5 o'clock on Saturday afternoon in my backyard, Mark, it was 43.9 degrees Celsius. And Malala is traditionally 2 to 3 degrees warmer than where I am in the north of Adelaide. So it is not a place I would have wanted to be. It was a good life call to cancel that race meeting and postpone it to April this year. Earlier in the show, I said it was a hot for the Dallara DW12 reaching 200 races. At the same time, it's also a not. Spec formula, get a new car, IndyCar, probably time to do something new. New IndyCar needs to be lighter. It needs to be sexier, a bit more integration in the whole Halo cockpit thing. Probably time that you move on with that. And finally, and not this week, sad news that motorsport photography legend Bill Forsyth, who was a mentor to many of the greats in our sport around our era, Mark, including Dirk Kleinsmith and a few others, he passed away earlier this week, unfortunately, due to illness. So that's a shame. And our condolences to all his families, those of us who love motorsport photography will know of Bill's work. It was some of the finest historical motorsport photography that exists these days. So that's a loss to our industry. Thoughts and prayers with Bill and his family.
IndyCar, general strife. Honda's cracking it. They're all very much looking at the whole NASCAR thing, and that all seems to have some serious legs about it. The charter system, even the talk of the lack of bumping at Indy 500, Michael Andretti coming out this week and having a big
Roger Penske clip, didn't he? Yeah.
Oh, I mean, he's only a billionaire, but Roger's idea was to ask the teams for $1 million each to buy a charter, which kind of rubbed Michael the wrong way. So interesting times there to see see how that all shakes out. Because, I mean, obviously, Penske had to weather the storm of the pandemic and put on the Indy 500 and bought the Speedway and then couldn't let anyone into it once he tarted it up. So it's been an interesting few years. Do you give him 12 months now to get his act together, and hopefully they come out the other side and IndyCar's stronger for it? Appendicitis. Have you still got yours?
I do.
Oh, boy. Hold on to it, because when they let go, tears. And it's further to sort of what Rusty said earlier, like when I had a blowout, I got diagnosed at the university doctors, caught the bus to the hospital, walked up the hill, and they kind of frowned at that. But I was much worse afterwards. It is a pain in the guts afterwards. And if Carlos gets on the grid at the AGP, he is an absolute superhero. So not nice thing to have happen there. Down to Phillip Island Historics on the weekend, the regularities. And I don't know if this is hot or not, but it sure was an eclectic mix. You know, where else in the universe on one race car can you see one racetrack, can you see race cars without any sort of roll bar or head protection at all? Historic Formula Vs, Datsun 1600s, a $20 million Ferrari 250 LM, and a McLaren M8B going warp factor 7 billion with its 7-litre big block Chev. It was mildly terrifying. Good hope.
Seems safe.
The other thing that baffles me, and I reckon that this is absolutely criminal, is that there was no broadcast of the event. You know,
yep.
TV is interested in the Shannon Speed Series, the Bathurst 6-Hour, and High Tech All Super Series. But none of these events are a pimple on what the PI Classic was on the weekend. They had 400 race cars there. The place was absolutely chockers with spectators. And I can guarantee you, if the thing was on TV, all those spectators would absolutely still be there. You know, the Adelaide Motorsport Festival, it's clearly got better cars. It's a better event.
It's not competitive, though. It's not a race event.
But that's something that could lend itself to a post-produced show sort of thing. But I think as a live broadcast, that Phillip Island Classic, it was 4 days of racing. It was ludicrous. They need to get their act together and splash out and get some TV and take the thing to the next level. Give it some international exposure, because if that was streamed, even just streamed, everyone in the universe would watch it. Think of all the people who had family who come from around Australia that their family and friends couldn't be there to watch that. They would absolutely all tune in. So
that is... And working with them now, that is an event that Seven would go crazy for. They would put the whole thing on Plus, and I would almost suggest that they would end up with a bunch of it on Mate as well, on free-to-air. That you're spot on. And look, at the very least, it should be a blend line stream of the level at which they produce the Vic State Racing Series stuff. I wonder if it's just an old-school promoter mentality from the VHRR that they just don't, they perhaps, that maybe they're concerned that it will affect their gate. And sure, it's their big event for the year, but it's not going to. There is no way. And look, Goodwood stream every single one of their events, and they sell out every single one of their events from a ticket point of view. So there's a huge demand for it. It has to happen. I agree with you. That's an excellent knot.
And another thing that it's been around for a long time, but using race savers, basically, it's a one-way scanner to the competitors, and they have an earbud in. They can hear directions direct from race control of what speedway is happening. It was a speedway thing originally, and Queensland Raceway had it very early on in the piece up there for their non-Motorsport Australia races. And it's simple. You give the drivers a code word when they're sitting on the dummy grid. An official comes past, cops the code word. They know that the people are listening, and it's fantastic. You can see it in action that race control can bark out orders. Hey, there's a problem here. There's a car here. There's officials on the racetrack. Back off. Do this, do that. And you can see it all happen, and everyone complies. And on the weekend, you'd have these dramas where a car would come out of the pits and clap out. So they'd red flag a practice session, whatever, straight up. And you'd lose 10 minutes. Even if it's a 30-second recovery, you'd still lose 10 minutes and your program's buggered. But if you just had these receivers and you're able to keep everyone in check, I think it would sort of... So many dramas at this level of sport where you're not this professional level where every competitor has a person on a headset in the pits tuned into race control radio at the same time. So I think for a bit of investment there, they're $150 to buy the units new, get them cheaper secondhand, you can rent them out. You know, a lot of people would do that. It'd make these races just go a lot more smoother. And you mentioned it, not is the hot 40 degrees at Phillip Island at the beach. That was unbearable. It was bloody terrible. I parked up Saturday before I blew a gasket, and I'm pretty sure a fair few other people did. It was no good. And one final one for me, not also goes to the need to repave parts of Phillip Island already, apparently just after they've paved it, because it's bumpy as all get out. So
really,
that's something from the 1960s Phillip Island playbook right there. So yeah, that wasn't great when people in wobbly old historic cars are going, boy, it's bumpy out there. Yeah. that's not ideal.
No, because they generally don't have ride control anywhere near as good as the current ones, so they tend to smooth the bumps out a bit better. Interesting. Interesting. Good knots. What are you looking forward to this weekend?
Speed Series on the screens of Seven. There's a bit of club stuff happening around Victoria, but I think I'm just going to try and save some batteries for the Grand Prix, because that's just going to be a massive 4 days of action down at Albert Park.
Good program, actually, Simmons Plains. Two big national categories. Well, three in a way, because it's round one of the Sportsedan Championship, which is going to be quite good because there's no Tony Ricciardello and there's no Jordan Caruso. So there's a pretty wide open grid, which is going to be exciting. Looking forward to calling that this weekend alongside some Trans Am action, which will be great fun on the screens of Seven. Like we said, if you're in South Oz or nearby, get to the AMF. It is a terrific event. That team do an incredible job putting that all together. Very much worthwhile. I think that's the show for this week. Shebex will be back with our regularly scheduled programming next week as we look ahead to the Formula One Australian Grand Prix.
That's a big call saying that he'll come back. I'm
taking a swing, but in the same way as a Dale Coyne Racing driver announcement, I'm hoping it happens without us even knowing.
He's going to pull his retirement 2 minutes after we recorded this.
He will too. He will too. Thank you for listening to the show this week. Thanks to Greg Rust for jumping on and guest hosting early in the first half of our program. Don't forget to subscribe to On The Grid wherever you get your podcasts from. And continue to do so. Lots more coming your way. Grand Prix next week, Bathurst 6 hour, the week after that, and then it's April. This world is going crazy. He's Mark Walker. I'm Richard Crowell. Thanks for listening to On The Grid. We'll see you next week.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.